Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Everybody, welcome to a live edition of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Today, I've got a couple people from Workfront, and they're going to onboard us as teach us how they teach their SDRs how to write emails. We're going to go through a bunch of examples. We're going to ask them some questions, and we're going to leave some time at the end of the webinar or podcast to ask them some questions. So we'll open it up to Q&A. If you notice at the very bottom, if you used Zoom before, there's a chat button. You can use that just to make comments, but I find the best spot to put your questions is the Q&A. If you throw it into chat, I probably won't get a chance to get to it because I'm trying to talk to these guys. I'm trying to look at the chat, the Q&A, and I'm trying to look at my sort of, you know, episode overview here. So if you want your questions answered, the best place to do that is throw it in the Q&A. So with that taken care of, we'll leave some time at the end of the, at the end of this for you guys to ask some questions of Justin and Eddie, but I guess I should introduce to you Justin and Eddie, let you know who they are. So Justin, VP of sales, VP of digital sales, sorry, at WorkStory.
Workfront. Yep.
Oh, sorry, man. I was just talking to my buddy whose company is WorkStory. So Workfront. And Eddie, you're the digital sales and enablement manager at Workfront. And I'm going to write Workfront in big letters on my sheet here. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Now, Justin, hey, maybe just a, let's do a quick sort of, you know, 30 seconds about yourself. Cause I know, you know, if we just said, hey, you're the VP of sales here, it doesn't really do you justice, right? You're a guy who's been here, done this before. So why don't you give us just a little taste of where you've come from?
Yeah, my pleasure. So I'm VP of digital sales here at Workfront. You know, it's your traditional sales development type organization. We rebranded into digital sales because we kind of believe that's where sales development and or inside sales has gone. And we're kind of at the forefront of that. Prior to Workfront, I spent some time at InsideSales.com, HubSpot as global directors of their business development groups. And then prior to HubSpot and Inside Sales, I spent a long time at Oracle. And that's where I got in the technology industry, started as a rep and worked my way up to director. Found my way into sales development because I wanted to give management a shot and wanted to really work with, you know, people at the beginning stages of their sales career. And I haven't looked back. I'm still in it. So it's been 10 plus years in leadership and sales development.
Right on. And Mr. Eddie, how did you get to know Justin here?
Yeah. So I came on board to Workfront a few months before Justin joined us. Came over from another technology company, Workday, where I was an SDR. And previous to that, I'd had some instructional design and adult learning experience and exposure at a small software company. So I came here really to kind of bring those two things together, my understanding of the SDR role, as well as putting together learning and enablement programs. And it's been a great partnership with Justin, you know, since he's come on board. And I think we've really done some neat things. Including what we're going to talk about today, being, you know, really writing good tailored messaging to our prospects.
That's perfect. I'm really excited by this because I get both of you guys on the podcast. When we were first planning this out, you know, Justin and I had a great conversation about sort of the higher level strategy. And then he was telling me about some of the things that you were working on, you know, getting deeper into the tactical stuff. I was like, geez, you know, really excited to sort of get you both on. And then Justin suggested, hey, why don't we actually have, instead of just doing two separate ones, why don't we just do one together? And so I'm excited to get a chance to learn from both of you today. And so we're talking personal, like how you guys personalize your messaging, right? Mm-hmm. So before we jump into the details, why should we care about doing this in the first place?
Yeah, I can take that one on. Obviously, you know, people get hit up a lot via email. Emails become extremely noisy. And I mean, I'm a VP at a technology company. I feel it every single day. I get a ton. So, you know, but it still works. Email still works. It's not spammy if you do it right. So, you know, when I came to Workfront, you know, I think sales acceleration platforms created a problem. And it really made it really easy to set it and forget it, or spray and pray, whatever you want to call it. And that's what made email noisy and spammy. So, you know, when I came here, you know, I saw some issues with in terms of how we were, you know, trying to approach people and, you know, met with everybody. And we just made a decision to like, look, let's commit to hyper-personalizing at least our first touch. Because I think that's really, you know, your foot in the door. And that's the first thing someone's going to see that you're attempting to approach. So it's honestly just a way to get through the noise. And the things we talk about today are nothing we created. It's just, you know, best practice that we've taken, Eddie and I, from our experience in many different areas, and just kind of put together what we felt was a good fit for Workfront to get our message through, to get through to the right people and show them that, you know, we're relevant and we have a product that can potentially help them. So that it's really that simple.
That's great. Now, can you maybe you or Eddie, give me a sense for like when you joined, obviously it wasn't, you know, for you to say, hey, we need to switch and go, you know, full personalized or highly personalized, you know, that's a whole lot of work for an SDR. So I imagine there was a reason why you were, you know, why that came about. You know, can you talk about the data and the metrics?
The backstory. So when I started, when they first initially purchased their sales acceleration platform, this is before I joined here, they automated everything. Well, they found that they were getting very little to no response and are actually having deliverability issues with email. It's like, okay, we have a problem. They then turned to, when I say they, the people here prior in leadership before me, then turned to personalizing everything. Well, that created a second problem. They weren't getting enough tasks out the door. And also they were falling behind on many of them. So like ultimately, like the cadence that is built to work and touch people, say 20, 25 times, whatever you decide is good for your company, it was broken. Like they just weren't able to get through all the tasks. So there is a balance that is required in order to personalize things, but also personalize template things and get enough touches out so your cadence goes through the whole entire motion and your reps can actually stay on pace with it. So that's where we kind of grew a happy medium. It's like, look, let's hyper-personalize each first touch. Can we commit to that based on the amount of people we want to target at any given time? And then from there, we can have some automation rules or an automation engine kind of going out while we're making calls and hitting them up on social media. So it's just a balance that we found, you know, worked for us. But that's the backstory of why we did what we did. But we do, and we are committed to hyper-personalizing every single first email for someone that we're looking to talk to.
That's awesome. And can you give me a sense for like what the, because I think balancing the number of steps to make sure that the team can actually execute it is super key. Mm-hmm. The number of times I've, you know, back in the olden days of, you know, no sales enablement platforms, you just sort of build something on Salesforce and yep. then you miss a couple of days and you have 1,000 tasks built up and you're like, well, I'm deleting all these and I'm going to go delete these automation rules because there's no way I'm going to get through 1,000 tasks in a day. So can you give me a sense for, you know, what your cadences look like and sort of what the volume is that each SDR is putting through?
Yeah, I'll go really high level. And Eddie, if you want to elaborate, I don't want to take all of it, but we found that on average, we need about 15 to 20 touches before we engage with somebody. So we set our cadence at 20 touches. Again, it's a balance of email, calling, and also social media. And that's for just a general proactive outreach type sequence. Obviously, if we get a hot lead, it's like a pretty heavy call sequence over a few days. But, you know, we spread this out about 3 weeks, 20 touches. So, you know, it's persistent, but it's not harassing somebody. And again, it's a balance between email, social, and calling, just spread out over a given period of time. So that works for us. Really, to make that work, it's understanding how many people one rep can effectively work. It's because you have to be able to get through your tasks. So you can't have too little, but you also can't overload it because then the cadence breaks or the sequence breaks, right? So, you know, we know what that is for us. And every single day, you know, we have a dashboard making sure that people enter the right amount of people in sequence. So they're at kind of that golden number. And honestly, usually if they're at the golden number and are loading and feeding the beast every single day, they're going to hit their number here. So it does take an analysis and understanding. And it does start with making sure you have not enough people to call, but the right amount of people to call, because you can actually have too much in there to where it breaks down.
Gotcha. Maybe Eddie, could you add some context around like, what is that golden number?
Yeah. So again, to Justin's point, it's really about understanding what your team, your department's threshold is. We found what that is and how many contacts we need to load into our automation sequences. And that's kind of hits that perfect balance of, you know, giving our reps enough to do so that they're constantly filling the funnel, but also allowing them to create that hyper-personalization that Justin talked about. And it took us a while to work through that and figure out exactly where that was across, as an average across our different teams, right? But once we found that, reps have to push themselves, but they have enough time to do the personalization that they need without getting bogged down and still get enough tasks out the door to be successful.
That's great. And so what was the, can you give me an idea of how many contacts that they're, how do you guys see it? Are they working a certain number of contacts? Do you add a certain number of contacts into the sequence per day? Can you give me a sense for the numbers that made sense for you guys?
Yeah, I can do that. So we obviously have a Salesforce report that shows us how many people are active in sequence at any given time.
Yeah.
For us, and again, this is very specific to us, but if, you know, we sell to enterprise companies, we sell technology at enterprise companies. If we have about 120 to 150 people active in sequence, that is definitely enough to get the right activity out the door. And if we get the right activity out the door, we're generating enough qualified pipeline for the sales team more often than not. So it usually takes about an average of 10 people per day that they are adding in. Sometimes like they might add more, there's an event and then the next days they might not have to add as much, but it's usually having about 120 people in sequence and adding about 10 people today. And if people are doing that consistently here at Workfront, they're in really good shape to hit their numbers.
Gotcha. And how do you guys measure numbers? Is it pipeline generated, deals closed, number of meetings?
Yeah, we prescribe our target account or our target market very diligently, which is nice when it comes to compensation, because we know if they're creating a meeting or booking a meeting or creating an opportunity in an account, it's going to be high quality, and it is. So we make it very simple. We compensate on the number of qualified sales opportunities every single month.
Gotcha. Do you mind if I ask what that number is?
Yeah, we do right now in the enterprise, we're looking for 5 qualified opportunities per month.
Okay. These are, I'm guessing based on what I know about Workfront and, you know, selling enterprise deals, these are not small $10,000 deals.
We're targeting, you know, pretty big companies in the enterprise and are very strategic with our outreach. So it's definitely, you know, a balance between quality and quantity. They can obviously coexist, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, if a rep has like a top 10, we're trying to crack into that top 10. And if we do, you know, we have a pretty strong opportunity there more than likely. Cause we do a really good job behind the scenes of understanding, you know, the best accounts for us to go after, the best fits for Workfront, people we can fundamentally help and mm-hmm. change the way they work. And then, you know, ultimately that's good for the sales organization of a kind of a more qualified opportunity. It's not further down the cycle, but it's just like better up front because of probably who we're talking to and then the count it's in. So we're very persona based too. Each one of our sequence has a persona tied to it. And then within that persona, like a level of person. So we're very specific with who we're reaching out to and why, and then what that message is. And, you know, that helps us hyper personalize then at the end of the day as well.
That's cool. It sounds like you're, as the leadership team, you're giving the account or your SDRs, your prospectors, this is the list of accounts, you know, here's your 120 or 100 and whatever it is. This is your territory.
Exactly. Yeah. We have like a geo based kind of a type territory. But within that, it's really marking what the actual target accounts are within that territory and ultimately prescribing to them. There's enough accounts there where there's absolute autonomy, you know, to pick and choose. You really can only work probably 5 to 10 counts really solid at a time. So they can, you know, pick and choose who they're working and why. And then when trigger events come up, which is a big part of our hyper-personalization, which Eddie will get into, you know, they have autonomy there. They can make decisions, but, you know, at the end of the day, they are targeting an account that the company and the sales organization wants them to target.
And then they're going and tracking down the personas within each. And then you've sort of built out some of that persona messaging or the messaging for each persona. And then their job is to hyper-personalize that.
Correct. Yeah. So we have a playbook to where they have kind of the talk track or the value prop. It's really tracking down, you know, doing research on the account and the person, tracking down a compelling trigger and then taking that value proposition and then firming it up with a call to action. So I'm not gonna steal Eddie's thunder, but it's really that simple. It's kind of a three-step prescription to having success reaching out to somebody. But man, I a lot of companies, you know, are persona-based selling, but you know, that's really where it starts. Understanding the person you're talking to, the challenges or the issues that they may have within their team or their department, and then how you can help, you know, and if you have that, you know, you don't have to wait for them to go online and fill a form. I know you're big fans of that. Like, you can provide your outreach and be proactive and get in front of them. And that's what we're trying to do here at Workfront.
Right on. So maybe I'll ask, like, let's get into the details here. How do we tailor our messaging? How do you tailor your messaging? Where does it start? What does that look like?
Sure. Eddie, you want to take that one?
Yeah. Yeah. So the very first place it starts is doing really good research on an account. We emphasize that pretty heavily in their onboarding and also throughout their time here, but that, you know, you really shouldn't be reaching out to an organization, to a person, if you don't know why you're reaching out. If you don't understand who you're reaching out to and how we help them, then why are you talking to them, right? That's, I think, where a lot of SDRs and a lot of, honestly, salespeople get a bad rap, is for calling people without really understanding why, for trying to sell someone a product or a service without really understanding how it helps them. So we start with research, and we have a lot of different research tools we leverage for that. You know, I'd say the one that we probably leverage the most is LinkedIn. Use Sales Navigator a lot to understand both the organization and the individuals that we're looking to speak to.
And so in this sort of research step, can you give me some examples of some of the things that your team might be looking for? Right? Like if they're going on LinkedIn.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin mentioned trigger events. Sometimes people call them catalysts for change. Essentially, it's some kind of compelling event or something that's occurring or has recently occurred that impacts an organization or a prospect. And that's usually where we start. You know, it's important to have a foundational understanding of an organization, know what they do and where they're located and those kind of basic things. But once you have that pinned down, and that's pretty easy to find, then it's a matter of understanding what's going on there, how it's impacting an organization, and then how that in turn relates to what you can provide to help them with that.
Gotcha. And so I'm imagining if I've got, you know, like Justin said, sort of 10 accounts, what if I, if I'm looking at one and I'm saying I can't find a trigger event here?
Yeah. So a couple of things that we talk about, right? Everything is a balance, right? You have to balance time. And so you can't spend hours and hours trying to create a book report on an individual or an organization. And that can be really challenging and difficult. But I think what we found is that if you know where to look, more often than not, you can usually find some kind of trigger or catalyst for change. Most of the time, people just don't want to spend the time doing it, or they're looking for the wrong things.
Hmm. So can you give me some examples of things that you might be able to, or that you would look for if you're looking for trigger events?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of really easy ones that are quick and you can find pretty quickly if they're there. But one is a job change, right? Has someone recently moved companies? Has someone recently been promoted? And especially has someone recently come from a customer that you already have who may be familiar with the product, right? Those are really, really easy things you can find quickly on LinkedIn or other, you know, sales research tools. Other things are, you know, just compelling events that are happening in the news. Anything from an IPO to a new product launch to rebranding. There's a lot of places to find that stuff and a lot of, you know, agnostic sites that have industry information as well. You know, any kind of the research firms like Deloitte, you can go on there and see what's going on in the industry and what might be impacting some of your prospects.
Hmm. Another thing too, Colin, I think as the stronger the trigger, to me, the more personal it is. Not personal like in their personal life, but personal to them. So, you know, on the individual level, we look for people that might have posted a blog, might have written an article, maybe spoke at an event. Like, and it's less about what actually is said within that, but it's more of the gesture to me. Like, knowing that, like, look, I took my time to learn a little bit about you, and based on what I learned, I feel we can help you. And it's just, it's a good gesture. And to Eddie's point, like, I don't think the majority of salespeople do it correctly or take the time to do that. And if you do, I think you'll get through, you know, a lot of the noise and get you know, to someone, you know, above and beyond a lot of other people that are attempting to do the same thing.
Mm. This sounds like a really critical part of the, of your process, right? If you don't have a compelling trigger event, a compelling reason to reach out, then it doesn't matter how good the messaging is or whatever it is. It's not relevant. It's not going to resonate with them right now.
Yeah. And you got to capture them quickly. So, you know, that trigger event's probably the first or second line that is in your email, right? So you're, you know, you're either going to catch them or you're not. So if it's more personalized and personal to them, and like I said, it is tied to something that they did or care about, I think you'll get them to at least continue reading. It's like a miniature milestone, step by step by step, to get someone to agree to meet with you. And that's what it first is to get through the noise and get someone to agree. But you're right. Like, it, you know, we will go in with a value proposition if we do not have a trigger, because we do believe, we know who we can help and why we can help them. And many of the people we talk to and the companies that we prospect into have challenges, or they're going through a big digital transformation thing. Like, that's a big thing right now. So we're fortunately in a market where we can help a lot of companies. But that said, we have a better shot at getting through to people if we have that trigger. So we are looking for that for sure.
Gotcha. So just so I can sort of recap on this step, it's really, we're doing some research on LinkedIn. We're looking for job changes, promotions, like new hires within sort of a target account and within our personas. If we can't find that, we're looking for sort of industry news, maybe a blog post that the company put out or a blog post that the individual put out. Is there any other types of trigger events that I'm missing here?
I mean, there's really an infinite number. To Justin's point, the more personal it is, the better. And we kind of have a hierarchy of, you know, what's going to resonate the most. And we start with always try and find the most personal thing. So if it's someone's post that they've made on social media, an event they spoke at, a job change that they've had. And then from there, we kind of branch out, right? What's going on at the company? Was there a reorg? Do they have new executive leadership that might impact someone on the way down? And then even a step further from that, what's going on in the industry, right? If we're in the healthcare industry, is there legislation that's come out that's going to impact the way they have to operate? If it's a financial organization, you know, kind of same thing. Is there things going on in the wider industry that's going to impact how they operate? And if so, can we trace that back to our value prop? And to Justin's point, we still reach out if we can't find a trigger, but because of the great stuff that we have with our personas and the persona messaging, we try and offload the need for our DSRs to have to recreate that every time by having it so accessible to them, so that they can really focus on finding that hyper-personalized touch and mapping that back to the greater value pitch, so that it's a really consistent, cohesive, and personal message that the prospect's receiving.
Gotcha. So it's
kind of like start as personal as you can, then branch out, you know, to the company, then the industry. I mean, if you are selling any kind of product or service to big companies, you probably don't have to go further than the company. I mean, people have 10Ks. You can probably gather something from their website or their news section. To Eddie's point, really tying that into that person and why they should care. So, for example, if I go on a company's website and I read that their CEO, one of his or her top three initiatives is digital transformation, I can take that and I can go down to the individual and apply why that should be important to them, or, you know, start a conversation around, you know, their involvement in or what challenges they foresee having within it. It's just something to start the conversation that's relevant, right? So, you know, more often than not, we're fine, you know, at the company level, but we do try to start at the personal level.
Gotcha. And then worst case scenario, you can go with this sort of value prop message, which I'm assuming is based off of the persona. Hey, I see you're in this sort of job title. You know, here's how our product has impacted others that are similar to you.
Yeah. So how we kind of put that together without getting too far ahead or off topic, but, you know, we look for, obviously we look for a personal benefit that our product has to the person. So if they use our product, what does it mean for them? The functional benefit that our product provides. And then really the most important, I think our best people do this well and do it more often than not, is the emotional benefit that the person might find in using our product, right? So whether it's working more efficiently to save themselves time or to get a promotion, and here's what our product can do in doing so from a functional standpoint, like that is really the core and the nucleus of our framework around our value prop. And all of it's laid out in our playbook. To Eddie's point, these guys are flipping through it every day and honestly get to the point where they know it by heart and you know, it's very accessible to them. So if you are listening and you don't have, you know, kind of frameworks for a value proposition or frameworks or persona-based value props, that would be a good place to start, because you use them on the phone, you use them in your email, and that helps out a lot.
Gotcha. I'm just going to make a note. We'll maybe come back to that at the end if we've got time.
Sure.
So step one is research. So what is step two?
So once you've done the research, then you're ready to write your email, essentially, because the value props are so kind of prepackaged for us based on the persona and what we know about them. We've created a framework that gives a lot of flexibility in how our reps write emails or in-mails or whatever kind of messaging framework they're using. And it's really consistent. It gives them guidance into how to best position the information they have while still letting them have the autonomy to have their own voice and to write the way they want to write. So we have a 5-step framework that we use that's worked really, really well. DSRs are able to adopt it and understand it. And honestly, once they learn it, they don't really vary from it, because they find success with it pretty early on.
Great.
Yeah, Colin, you've heard us use the word framework probably ad nauseum at this point. Man, it's one of the best things that we did is create a best practice or a framework for people to work within. They're faster with it. They're more efficient. And these things are proven to work. And it's nothing we invented. It's just we took some best practice and essentially trained them on this is how it should look in terms of like a structure or a framework. And we do it for our calls. We do it for our target account strategy. We do it for our emails. Might be cool. I don't want to take the call from you, but might be cool for Eddie to walk through an example or two if it's a good time to do that, so the group can really see what these look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would love to follow up on, maybe just before we look at an example, can you walk me through, like, Eddie, step-by-step, what is that framework for writing emails?
Absolutely. So again, it's 5 steps. It's really, really consumable and easy for our DSRs to understand. The first is to write an introduction. And to Justin's point, that's where you leverage your trigger. It really should be in the first or second sentence, because if that is what makes it personal, if that's what makes it meaningful to them, you want to have that right up front. So you write the introduction, you include the trigger, and then you have some kind of transition. Most of the time, it doesn't have to be overly complex, but it's just a way for the DSR to tie what trigger event is happening, what personal thing they found, to your value prop. So it's just a kind of transitory statement. If you think about it, like writing an essay at school, right? Your last sentence of a paragraph, you transition into your next one. So you have your intro, your transition, and then third, you have your value proposition. And most of the time, that's really, really easy for our reps to have, because they pull it out of the playbook. They, you know, pick what things they think are going to be most meaningful and resonate the most with this individual. And then after that, you write your conclusion, your call to action, where you're asking for your meeting, right? So those are the 4 steps. And the 5th step is actually writing the subject line. And for a lot of people, you're going to say, okay, well, why is writing your subject line number 5? When I write my emails, I just write my subject line right away. The reason we have our reps write their subject line last is because when you write your subject line first, you tend to do 2 things. And one is you box yourself in to writing about a certain subject or a certain topic. Instead, we challenge our DSRs to think about what is going to resonate the most with their prospect and write that in the body of the email before they write a subject line that's going to be catchy or clickbaity. And that tends to be the second thing that happens when you write your subject line first, is you try and think of some clever statement or something that is going to catch their attention, but may not actually speak to the value you're trying to provide them. And so by writing the subject line last, we found that people, one, don't waste as much time trying to figure out what their subject line should be, because they can just look to their email and say, that's what it should be about. And it tends to be a better subject line when they do.
It's funny, the number of times I've started writing an email and then I get to the end, or writing a blog post or writing anything, and you finally get that level of clarity at like the last line. And it's like, oh, I totally buried the lead here. It's like, this is what I want. And so the first draft is usually just mind dumping. And then taking that last piece I wrote, it's like, okay, this is what I really want to start with. Then I'm going to put that up top. And so what you're saying is take that last piece that you get to and say, all right, let's use that as a subject line, because that's what we want to use to catch their attention.
Yeah. Once you've already outlined your trigger, your value prop, and know how that ties together, that's what you want to put in a concise short statement and throw that in your subject line, right? Don't try and fool your prospect. Let them know what you're talking about. And as long as it's going to actually have value for them, you have a good shot of them opening your email.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's awesome. So do you want to maybe walk us through an example or two here, Eddie?
Yeah. So let me go ahead and share my screen. These are actual emails that our DSRs wrote using our framework. So these aren't just examples we pulled up. And I've included not only the email or the message that the DSR has written, but also the reply they got to show you how prospects are responding to these emails. So let me share that real quick with you guys.
And if anybody's listening, maybe say after we've recorded this, I'm going to throw a link to this slideshow in the show notes so you can check that out.
Great. Okay. So we'll walk through one here, and this is from a DSR that started back in May, and this was one of the earlier emails he wrote. But essentially what he did is he went and did some research on this individual and found that this prospect had spoken at a conference. So he went and actually did a little research, did a little digging, and found out what she spoke about. And so he starts off, "Hey, Lauren, I loved your recent talk at such and such a conference. The analogy you used hit home, as putting out fires in the workplace is exhausting and unfortunately part of every team's day-to-day. You had some great insights into enterprise work management challenges, aligning communications, prioritizing projects, and then tracking and reporting those deliverables." So not only did he know that she spoke at a conference, but he knew what she spoke about. And it just so happened that what she spoke about speaks really, really well to the value that our product provides. Mm-hmm. So he mentions in his transition here, you know, "I was curious how these challenges currently are affecting your team at company X, and I think it would be valuable to begin a dialogue about Workfront. So this is what you've been challenged with. Here are the problems you're experiencing. I want to tell you about Workfront." He goes in and jumps into Workfront's value proposition. He talks a little bit about the functional benefit, but then really focuses on the emotional benefit and how it's going to help her. And then he has his call to action, asking for 10 to 15 minutes on the phone, and asks, you know, which day will work best, trying to keep that call to action open-ended and give her some specific times that would work for him, right? And I think the response he got is really cool. I'll share that with you guys right now. She replied and said, "Hi, Spencer. This is by far the most impressive sales email I have ever received. Kudos. Glad you enjoyed my talk and it resonated. Appreciate the feedback. I'm available these times these days. Let me know what works for you." So this just goes to show that a lot of people aren't taking the time to personalize. The fact that he knew what she talked about and could tie that to the value of our product was really impressive to her, and she had no problem telling him that. To Justin's point, and anyone who's, you know, in a capacity where you're kind of getting bombarded with prospecting emails trying to sell you stuff, they all start to sound the same after a while, and they're all just kind of white noise. So when you see something that you can tell someone understands what you do, understands what you might be challenged with, and has something that could potentially help, it kind of rises above the rest of that, and it can really be a distinguishing factor in your messaging.
That's great. Because I imagine you're totally right. It's the number of people that are just getting these blank, or not blank, but just your templated, you know, sales emails. And even if they did some research, saw you talked at, you know, whatever conference, doesn't actually show. It's like, it shows that you sort of Googled me, right? And not necessarily watch the talk, and let alone, so I think that's the first step, is like identifying that, hey, they did speak at this event. Sort of step two is listening to, and then step three was sort of processing that and figuring out how that's applicable to what we do here.
Yeah, you're right, Colin. The one thing I'd just reiterate there is it's not only finding a trigger event, but utilizing that trigger to deliver a message that'll resonate, or a relevant message. And that's what Spencer did here. Based on what she said in her talk, he felt that Workfront could potentially help. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. And just to kind of continue on this idea of being relevant, I think a lot of people kind of get the concept of finding a trigger or finding something personal. And what we found is when you focus on that and solely on that, then you end up finding things that aren't really relevant, but happen to be personal, right? You're a fan of this sports team, you went to this university, and don't get me wrong, those can be effective, but they aren't as effective as finding something that speaks to what's important to them in terms of their business challenge. Like, I get emails, and I'm sure you guys can relate all the time, of, "Hey, saw you went to this university, awesome. Now let me tell you about my product." Or, "Hey, I saw you're a fan of, you know, for me, the Utah Jazz. so glad they're doing well. Let me tell you about what I can do for you. And there's no relevancy there. I just find that to be clickbaity personally. I don't find a lot of value in it. And so we've even kind of categorized them into two different things. We talk about triggers, which are events, something that is happening or has happened that impacts how someone's working. And then also useful information, because that stuff can be useful, right? Knowing where their alma mater is, knowing what companies they've worked for, that can be really, really useful. But when you have something that's happening or has happened, it increases the urgency of your message, right? You're talking about something that is compelling and happening right now, and that just increases the value of what you can provide for them. Hmm.
That's great. Thanks, Eddie. So should we take a look at another one here?
Sure. Let me go ahead and jump in to the next one we have here. And this is from another, let me skip back here. Let's see if I can go back here. So in this particular case, the DSR, the rep Jordan, he found that a particular prospect had moved from one of our larger customers and had taken a new role at a different company. Okay. And it was actually our largest customer that this person moved from. So he found that, and he didn't just stop there though. He went to this person's LinkedIn profile and dug in and found a few articles that he had shared and read those articles and figured out what was important to this guy. So he says here, Robert, moving from company X to company Y must have been a large but well-deserved transition for you. So, hey, I know that you came from this former customer of ours. I know you made this change. I've noticed your recent shared articles on LinkedIn regarding organizational excellence and establishing a competitive advantage and had to reach out. Okay. During your time at company X, did you ever come across Workfront? In your role at company Y, you may struggle with market delays due to compliance, communication, and collaboration problems. And then he goes into kind of his Workfront value pitch. So what I really like about Jordan's approach here is he not only knows that this guy's moved from one company to another and uses kind of that personalization of, hey, you may be familiar with us, but also says, also, I know that you care about this and this because you're sharing articles on it right now and we can help. Right? So he takes it past just finding one little nugget or one little trigger and really tries to understand his prospect to talk about that. And then he takes what he talks about in that email, pulls it into his subject line, right? Really short, really concise, but it speaks to what the email is about, which is moving from company X to company Y and increasing compliance, which is something that Workfront helps with. So I thought this was really cool. And the response that he gets from Robert, who's a VP at this new organization, says, thanks, Jordan. Apologize for not responding sooner. I've been traveling and digging through my emails. I have some time Thursday afternoon. Will this work for a 30-minute phone conversation, right? And this is really good to note because this came after Jordan's second follow-up email. He sent another email that spoke a lot to what he mentioned in the first email. You know, just because you send an email and don't get a response doesn't mean it doesn't resonate. Sometimes people just get busy and you got to send a couple of communications to rise above the rest of the noise.
Right on. And so that we talked about hyper-personalizing the first touch. How, mm-hmm. what did that second touch look like? Or what would have that second touch look like? Cause I don't think we asked you to bring that template, but
yeah.
Would it have been one of those like bumper emails? Hey, just wanted to bubble this to the top of your inbox. Or like you said, did he reference some of the previous content?
Yeah. So in our automation sequence, a lot of it points back to the first email. With this particular prospect, I know Jordan really, really wanted to get in touch with him and thought he had a great message for him. So he just kind of rephrased and rewrote some of his first email, didn't put a ton of time into it, but he knew what his value prop was. He didn't feel like he needed to change that. He just kind of bumped around a few items, sent it again, and then got this response shortly after.
Yeah, Colin, from a strategic perspective, if one of our DSRs knows that they have a really, really strong value prop, I mean, moving from our biggest customer and taking a leadership position at a new company is as good as it gets, right? Or they know there's a budgeted project or they read somewhere that, you know, there's this big initiative and this person's part of it. Usually we will hyper-personalize pretty much everything until we're exhausted. So Jordan will pause the automation, create manual tasks and, you know, email Robert probably personally, at least maybe 3-4 times. So I guess my point is I am encouraging people to go past the first email to personalize if you really think this is like perfect fit, great for our product or our service, definitely the person I want to be talking to and I got a great trigger, I don't want to lose it based on kind of vanilla-based emails, that then this is what they'll do.
Awesome. Okay. You know, it's funny. I was looking at this. I'm like, what is a TCON? I've never heard somebody refer to a phone call as a TCON before.
I think IT people might. We speak to a lot of people in IT.
Gotcha. All right, Eddie.
Sorry, I have one example. Do we have time to run through that real quick?
Yeah, let's go for it, man.
Yeah, so I think this one's a good one because it was actually an in-mail that one of our reps sent, and she followed the framework there too. I think that's the great thing about this is it's not just for emails, but it can be any kind of written prospecting or communication. It has all the important pieces to it. So she wrote to a gentleman named Gary and said, congrats to company X for being an overall leader in the OVA market radar. So she found something that had happened at the company level, right? Not at the individual, but we managed to find something that happened with the organization and said, that's a great accomplishment for your company and your customers. And then manages to tie that into what she believes will resonate with him from a Workfront value standpoint. So she goes in and says, at Workfront, we understand how important it is to ensure that your customers are successful when evaluating software and have the right tools in place, and then goes into more of the value proposition, talks about the functional and emotional benefits, and says, I'd love to connect with you and learn about your role and ask for some time, right? And his response was, Carly, thanks for reaching out. I'd like to learn more. Looks like, you know, Tuesday or Thursday will work. Does that work for you? So it doesn't really matter if it's email or in-mail. In fact, because people get less communications through in-mail, if you're having trouble reaching out to someone via email, that's a great way to go, just because people don't get as much through there and it can stand out a little more. And I think Carly had been trying to get a hold of this guy for some time and finally managed to crack through via social media, which was a great win for her.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that was a really good example of not having what I would argue is a very compelling trigger based on the person she was reaching out to. So she obviously probably found the fact that they won a customer service award on the website. Probably any company has that type of information on there, any at least bigger company, because she probably was just really struggling to find a personal trigger. So just an example of, you know, finding a company type thing or trigger can definitely work for you. And again, but it's leveraging what that is saying to why you or your product or your service matters is what's most important.
Perfect. So can we go back to the email for a sec? I've got a couple of questions that hopefully people here have questions, and maybe this is a good point or a good time to hit up that Q&A box at the bottom. If you got questions for Justin or Eddie or even myself, just hit up that QA button, start typing them in there, and we're gonna take some time in about 5 minutes and start answering those. And if I don't see any questions, I'm just gonna keep asking these guys tons of questions.
Is there a specific email you wanted me to go back to?
Yeah, you know what? The first one's a good start. I was just noticing the perfect. Your call to action here. I wanna talk about that for a sec, because I've seen a couple different versions here. I'd love to connect for 10 to 15 minutes when you're available over the next few days to see how you currently use the principles from your talk within your organization to see if we can help. So obviously a super personalized sort of beginning to the call to action, right? And this is sort of two parts. I'd love to connect. Here's the reason. I have time tomorrow or Friday, which works best to you, right? And so that's the CTA. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in the third email, if we jump to number three, perfect. You know, I'd love to connect to learn about your role and how you're managing your work. See if we can help. When would you have time to connect this week? So I'm wondering if you have a preference between do you have time to connect Thursday or Friday, or, you know, when would you have time to connect this week? Sort of an open-ended versus the specific, you know, these two.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of different ways that reps do it. And we try and give them the flexibility to do what they would like to. Data, you know, show, and we know that typically when you tend to lean on this end of instructing your prospect and telling them when would be best to meet, people have an easier time responding. It's one of those things where, you know, you give people, a million choices, they have a hard time figuring out, okay, when do I have time? When do I want to talk versus how about this time or this time, or let's chat now, or let's chat on this day. It kind of eliminates that for them, and they can just look at their calendar and see, am I available, right? So what we try and really emphasize is don't make it closed-ended. Don't make it a yes or a no. Typically suggesting a time or instructing your prospect works the best, But we do, you know, the reps have their flexibility and some have their personal preference on how they come across. Some reps will even send out links to, you know, proposed times where people can actually click on the link and calendar a time. Personally, I think, you know, that suggesting times is best and giving them, you know, maybe one or two options, just instructing them what to do. It increases the likelihood of their response and saying, yeah, I can meet, or this is a good time. Justin, do you have anything you would add to that?
Yeah, I'm like extremely opinionated on this. I think when you tell someone what to do, I know when you tell someone what to do, you have a better chance of them actually doing it and responding to you. So if you're actually looking for a response using language like, you know, please tell me if Tuesday or Thursday works better, you're more likely to actually have someone respond to that command, if you will. But at clearly we don't mandate anything. Like, we'd rather have it be comfortable for them and be in their own voice versus what I think is best. So we give them autonomy there. But to Eddie's point, it can all work. I think as long as it's genuine and in your voice, that's best. You know, also, you know, we don't have these in these emails, but you can see it in like the signature line of the email, but like having a Calendly or something similar where they can like just go click and book, you know, that's been pretty successful too. So it just makes it pretty easy. And I know a lot of people are doing that these days.
That actually was going to be my next question, is what does that email signature look like? And do you have ideas or prescriptions or more theories on what works best to include in a signature?
You know, candidly, like, we have not seen any kind of massive lift compared. Like, these emails were probably in the beginning of our year when we didn't have that feature. Now that we have it, like, I haven't seen a massive uptick in meetings being booked just because of that. So I think you don't need it. It can work just by being prescriptive and telling them what you're looking for them to do. The problem, like, if you talk about a problem with that, is you're taking the person out of the conversation that you're looking to have into a booking application. So if you really want a response, or your call to action is a question to engage in conversation, I wouldn't have it, because you're confusing them. You're like, well, do you want me to respond to the question, or do you want me to book a meeting? So I've seen people like misuse the technology in doing that. And I think most of our people actually don't have it on their first email because they are wanting to leave it open to a conversation and a response, but our automated ones often do, or our templated ones often do.
That's fair. So you'll have the link to like, here's my Calendly, or like, book some time with me, that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah.
How do you feel about reps when they just say, you know, here's my Calendly, instead of just, you know, doing the work and saying, does Tuesday or Thursday work better for you? Please let me know.
Personally, like, when I get that, it's just, I don't know, it feels less like a human interaction and more robotic to me. And the problem with a lot of those, and maybe I'm missing it, but like, when I click their calendar, it gives me their times that work for them, but then I got to go look at mine to see if I'm free. And it's like, just kind of a pain in the butt. So I tend to not do it myself, but that's just personal preference. So I guess my point is everyone's going to probably feel different about it. Some might think it's a great option and makes things easy. Others might be like, well, why don't you just suggest a time for me? So if you can do both and kind of divide and conquer it from that, that might be the best way to go.
That's fair. Eddie, I couldn't tell if you're raising your hand or coughing there. Do you have something to add?
Well, I was just coughing. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. Typically, you know, like we said earlier, when you suggest or, you know, kind of instruct your prospect, you have a better chance at response. But the biggest thing is we just try and teach good key principles, like make it open-ended, don't make it a yes or no, right? And kind of let our reps run with what is most genuine and you know, kind of natural and organic for them.
Yeah. I'd say if you're going to follow one rule, it's keep it open-ended. No yes or no questions.
Perfect. Okay. I think I get two questions here from the chat. The response rates. So what kind of response rates are you expecting from emails here?
Eddie, you want to take that one, or you want me to?
Why don't you go ahead and lead with that one, Justin?
Yeah. So getting a response rate on a specific email is really tough. Rarely will you send one email and get a response. So we're generally looking for an overall response to the entire cadence. So candidly, I don't measure response. I have the data, but I kind of take it with a grain of salt. I don't necessarily really look at response rates per email. I look at response rates per like cadence or sequence. Some people respond faster than others get busy. and it's hard to say. We do look at response rates in terms of one, knowing if an email, like if someone opens it or responds to it, if it's really low, there's something wrong with the email. So then we'll rewrite it. But I mean, anything you can get in the double digits is really, really good. So, I mean, we're aiming for like a double digit engagement rate within a specific sequence on our emails. And usually when we do that, I think we're like, that's a decent watermark for us, you know, having impactful emails that are working.
And so just so I'm clear, that's, it's not like a single email was, you know, 15 or 20%. That's the overall conversion rate of somebody going through that sequence, to a booked meeting or to a reply.
Yeah, to a meeting. Here's why I feel that way. It is definitely an opinion. It is my opinion. I believe, and Eddie touched on it earlier, I believe an email can be extremely effective without a response. So just looking at a response rate and understanding if something's good or not, for me, is not the right thing to do. Are we engaging with someone through the cadence? If we hit them up on call 7 and they answer, did they read our emails? Are they resonating? Do they know who we are? Did we create like a virtual handshake and a virtual relationship so that conversation's a little warmer? And if the answer to that is yes, and we're booking meetings through these, whether it's a 10% or 4% response rate on the first email, like I'm good with it. So it's really like, to me, it's the success of a balanced cadence and a balanced approach. And I know we're talking about emails today, but it's a balance between email, using the phone, and social. And are we able to book, you know, a certain percent of meetings from that cadence is really what I'm tracking and looking at.
Perfect.
But you know, you can A/B test emails and look at open rates. You know, if you A/B test them and one has a 10%, one has a 2, like, you know what email is better based on that. It's just for overall success, you know, I look at obviously much, much more than a response rate on a single email. So I hope that helped and didn't add any confusion.
No, I think it's a really great way of thinking about it, because I feel like it would be way too easy to over-optimize on an email template when you may not even be getting statistically significant results.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, right. if you're just automating everything and sending it to all the same people, like, you can go with response rate. But I think just looking at that, in my opinion, again, is a little old school or archaic.
Cool. So we got about 5 minutes left. I want to go, let's sort of do the lightning round, because I did promise to sort of surprise segment at the end for you guys to do a quick promo. So let's get through, I've got about 4 or 5 questions here. Let's get just real quick, short answers here. So just to kick it off, is there such thing as an email being too long, especially with all the personalization?
Absolutely. You know, today execs are on the go all the time. You know, I'm hardly at my desk. And if you guys are anything like me, you're probably the same way. You know, expecting me to be able to sit and read a novel on my phone, if that's where I'm checking my emails, just not going to happen. So as a general rule of thumb, we try and tell people, you know, write a message that's easily readable from a handheld. You know, if it can't be easily read from a handheld, it's probably too long. And that's why we really emphasize being short. Really emphasize, you know, cutting out the fat. Don't talk about things if it's not adding to the value of your message. If it's just nice to have, you know, get rid of it and stick to the need to have in your message.
Perfect. So what about within this approach, what are your daily activity averages? So it sounds like you're adding 10 new people to a sequence. So you're doing research on 10 new individuals. What does the rest of the day look like?
Yeah, I was just typing, I think Dylan asked that in the chat. I was typing a response, so I want to make sure we touched it. We average about 80 activities a day. That's a balance between calls, voicemails, email, and social. They're probably wondering, well, like, how many of these emails do you write a day? You know, if we're adding 10 people and you add on the fact that someone like what Jordan did, it might write another personalized email to like a hot prospect, you're probably writing between 10 and 15 hyper-personalized first touches a day. You know, I honestly, the best people here can get through one of those in 5 minutes. Once you do it a bunch and you have the framework and you know, there's a research portion and then, you know, putting that in the email and then being familiar with the value prop, you can actually bust these out very, very quickly, a lot quicker than you think. But they're writing about 10 to 15 emails. So a day in terms of activity, we usually have a power hour or two in the morning and the afternoon based on where they're calling in terms of best times to make contact, which is right away in the morning at the end of people's day. And then the middle portion of our day might be me calling on some leads. It's mainly doing primarily doing research and writing emails. So if I were to really like summarize our day, that's kind of how it's bookended: calls and then research and email in the middle.
Perfect. Really quickly, do you find response rates to be lower in certain months?
No, not in general. I think the summer's just slower in general. So I'd say if I had to pick something, it would be the summer. You know, people are just less likely to be in the office to get a hold of. They have vacations, their kids are out of school. I mean, I could go on and on. In Europe, I mean, like the country shut down in the summer. Some of them do. So that's obviously harder. And, you know, we've tested certain times of the day. You know, you can get some executives a little bit easier at night. So sometimes we'll push our automation out into the evening. But outside of that, I mean, everyone checks their email all the time now. If you're listening, like, you do it, you're on your mobile. So, I mean, you know, anytime, you know, someone's probably, you know, plugged in. And I've only been unplugged once myself, and it was for my wedding day. Literally every other day that I can remember being a leader, I have checked my email. If anything, just to delete out the junk. So like people are always looking. I think people are always looking at it.
Cool. Last question. I'm going to go to one of mine because I want to give you guys a minute. How persistent do I need to be?
Eddie, take that one. You were an SDR.
You have to be persistent. I think there is kind of this fear that everyone has innately of not wanting to bother people, right? And some people are a lot more aggressive and it doesn't bother them as much. But when you send, you know, three or four emails, when you've made a couple of calls and you're thinking, are they just ignoring me? And that there's always that fear in the back of your mind that, okay, maybe this person just doesn't want to talk to me. And that may be the case, but you have to give yourself the opportunity to be successful. And I mean, we know that your highest chance of success are at minimum, you know, 6 or 7 touches. That's across, you know, email, phone, social. But if you're not giving yourself at least that, you're really shooting yourself in the foot. People are busy. You know, if someone's calling my office phone, I'm probably not there 90% of the time. And if it's not an urgent email, I'm probably not going to respond to it right away. So, you know, it's going to take a few times to get through to me. And if anyone else is like that, you know, that's going to be the case will be the same. So I'd say minimum, give yourself, you know, 7, 8 touches, and more than that if you can, but you got to give yourself the chance to be successful. And to Justin's point, right, it's not all about just email or just calling. There's no silver bullet to be successful in prospecting. The best way is to have a balanced approach and make sure that you understand your prospect and know the value that you can provide to them.
That's awesome, Eddie. Do you have a, I want to, last question, and then we'll sort of jump to my favorite ending segment here. Is there a prescribed number of follow-ups or touches, or is it you're going to keep somebody in sort of sequence or cadence until they tell you to please kindly leave and then die?
I'll answer that. And then I got to jump. So I'm going to let Eddie finish up with everything. I got to go train our new hire class on something. Cool. Yeah. I mean, our sequences are about, you know, again, 20 touches over 3 weeks. After that, we'll do one of two things. They'll like basically kind of put them on the shelf for a bit and make a note or task in Salesforce to re-engage them later, or they'll just kind of wait for a compelling trigger to start again, or they might kick it back to marketing for some sort of nurturing or engagement. It really depends. There's no like silver bullet to it. I think any of those things can actually work, but to answer the previous question, if you keep hitting someone up, and I think the biggest part, if you're not giving enough days or time for them to like reboot or reset, and you're nailing them every day with an email, especially if it's an automated one, that's when you're going to get told to shoo off. So a lot of our automated emails are sharing a case study or sharing some sort of compelling fact or whatever it might be, or sharing content from our marketing team. You'll still be told to shoo off here and there, but if you're providing value, you know, people will let that play out as long as they want. But there's a point where you got to cut bait and move on, because you can only call so many people or, you know, send out so many emails. So, but Colin, I got to run. Thanks so much for having me. I hope your group that you had on today learned something from us, and can't thank you enough.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin. I feel like I learned a ton. I've got a bunch of notes myself. So thanks for coming on and staying a couple minutes over time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thank you. All right, Eddie. So I did want to ask sort of one sort of follow-up question on the follow-ups there. On the emails that you're sending, the content approach to, if you're sending out a case study, mm-hmm. is that something that that you also have a call to action on those emails, or is it just, hey, here's a case study?
Yeah, it all honestly depends on where it falls in the sequence, right? On some of our more automated emails after the first hyper-personalization, we do have some content we send out, whether that's an ebook, recording to a webinar, a case study. And it depending on where it falls in the sequence, it could just be kind of a nurture email or it could have a call to action. In terms of the hyper-personalized ones, we leave it up to the DSR whether or not they want to include an asset to send along in that email. But one thing that I tend to recommend, and I think Justin feels the same way, is if you're going to send them something, try not to send them more than one asset or give them more than one place to go. Because what happens then is your prospect looks at that link, they look at that PDF or that URL, they click on there, and then all of a sudden, that's their resource for answers. And you don't want to point them somewhere else. You want to point them back to yourself and say, you want to talk to me, you want to call me. So if we do have any kind of asset, we try to use it as, kind of to pique their interest and maybe be a little educational, but ultimately to point it back to saying, you'll want to talk to me, not go here to find out what you need to know and then decide if you want to talk.
Perfect. Thanks for that. I got one last thing, and it's sort of our surprise segment. This is mostly for the podcasters. Participants, if you guys want to drop, feel free. I know we went a couple minutes over, but the surprise segment, as promised, I think we were originally queuing up to do this with Justin, but I guess you get a chance. So my favorite thing to do at the end of every episode, I like to give people a chance to sort of promote, either come work for me or come buy my stuff. So, and we'll do that through a cold call role play. So what is it what are you going to cold call me? Do you want to sell Workfront? Do you want to try and get people to come work for you?
Are you
secretly a musician? You want to promote a show?
Yeah. I think Justin's probably the best person to promote coming to work at Workfront and talk about our culture and such. So I can talk about, we can just do a cold call role play just Workfront in general. I do got a buzz here in about a minute. So if we could, try and make this tight, that'd be awesome.
Sounds good, man. So let's say I'm a marketing exec at one of your, target companies.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So ring, ring. Hi, this is Colin.
Hi, Colin. This is Eddie from Workfront.
Hey, Eddie.
Hey, I know I'm calling out of the blue. Would it be all right if I just took 30 seconds to explain to you the reason for my call?
We got 30 seconds. I'm just about to walk in and interview somebody.
All right. Well, Colin, Workfront is a digital work automation platform that helps marketing executives like yourself better manage your digital work. Through its reporting functionality and its collaboration efforts, your marketing teams can get better visibility into all of the work that's going on so that you can get projects out the door faster and show your C-levels and your executive board the value that marketing is driving for the business. Now, what this will do for you is allow you to stop those sleepless nights, make sure you understand completely what's going on in your department, and make sure that you have a handhold on what's happening in marketing. Now, Colin, I'd love to take just a few more minutes to talk about what your visibility into your marketing work looks like right now.
Cool. I think that's all the time. I want to make sure that you're not late for your next thing. And I actually do have somebody who just walked in the door a few minutes ago that I'm supposed to be interviewing. So Eddie, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You and Justin were great. This was such a fun 1-2 punch to have the two of you on at the same time. So thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. See you, Eddie. Thanks, everybody.